पते श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 28 एंटाइटल्ड पुरंजन बिकम्स अ वुमन इन द नेक्स्ट लाइफ टेक्स्ट 55 सत्वम विहाय माम बंधो गतो ग्राम्य मतीर्महिम विचरण पदम अद्राक्षी कयाची निर्मितम स्त्रिया स्त्रिया बाय अ वुमन ट्रांसलेशन एंड परपोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस इसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद ट्रांसलेशन माय डियर फ्रेंड यू आर नाउ माय वेरी सेम फ्रेंड Since you left me, you have become more and more materialistic. And not seeing me, you have been traveling in different forms throughout this material world, which was created by some woman. Purport. When the living entity falls down, he goes into the material world, which was created by the external energy of the Lord. This external energy is described herein as, quote-unquote, some woman, or prakriti. This material world is composed of material elements, ingredients supplied by the Mahatattva, the total material energy. The material world created by this external energy becomes the so-called home of the conditioned soul. Within this material world, the conditioned soul accepts different apartments or different bodily forms and then travels about. Sometimes he travels in the higher planetary systems and sometimes in the lower systems. Sometimes he travels in higher species of life and sometimes in lower species. He has been wandering within this material universe since time immemorial. As explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Brahmanda Brahmita Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasad Paya Bhakti Lata Bij Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 19.151 The living entity wanders into many species of life, but he is fortunate when he is once again meets his friend, either in person or through his representative. Actually, it is Krishna who personally advises all living entities to return home back to Godhead. Sometimes Krishna sends his representative who, delivering Krishna's very message, canvasses all living entities to return home back to Godhead. Unfortunately, the living entity is so greatly attached to material enjoyment that he does not take the instructions of Krishna or his representative very seriously. This material tendency is mentioned in this verse as Gramya Mati, which is sense gratification. The word mahim means within this material world. All living entities within this material world are sensually inclined. Consequently, they become entangled in different types of bodies and suffer the pangs of material existence. Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu asked me a few weeks ago to speak on Sunday, this day, and then he gave me the verse. So, few days later, I wasn't there for some days, and few days later I came back, and then I saw the verse and I read it. Actually, I was really in a kind of panic, because I felt so guilty. I felt, how does he know me? Is he doing it with a particular purpose? Why is he giving me this verse? I was really thinking that, how does he know me so well that why is he, giving me this? Has he chosen this verse? Then I said, maybe Krishna is speaking through him. I was feeling extremely guilty to do this verse because this, I feel this very much applies to me about how we get entangled in this material energy. So I will give a class as I understand what the saints in our movement speak about. Because Krishna talks about, Prabhupada mentions everything about the entanglement brought in by this Prakriti, by the material world, the material elements. And so, we see here how the material energy is the all-powerful, all-pervading and all-capturing Maya. And it, the amazing thing is that it has the power of God. It has as much power, just like Krishna, permeates into everything, pervades into everything through His divine energy. The same way, the Krishna moves through His divine energy. So, therefore, we actually are always in touch with His energy. The only thing is, depending on our, the only difference, though it's come from the same source, whether it is Yogamaya or Mahamaya, it is our perception. So, according to our own perception, that is, according to our consciousness, if we are surrendering to the will of Lord, if we are with love, then we will actually see it. Krishna's energy pervades, his all presence is felt in the form of Yogamaya. Otherwise, if we are having separate arrangements or interests, desires other than with Krishna, then actually we will be in touch with Krishna. Krishna will be seen in the all-pervading presence of Mahamaya. So though they are actually from the same energy, the same source, but our perception will make the difference. Yogamaya is actually there to, in fact for devotees, it is a big help. It is trying to help encourage our various services and love and affection for Krishna. And it in fact reveals everything of Krishna everywhere and everything. Wherever we see, can put us in touch. It can nourish our devotion and bring us closer. But if we misuse the independence and if we are wanting to be separate, then the same energy in the form of Mahamaya will keep us, will keep Krishna covered from our vision. We will not be able to see Him. We will be under various misconceptions that we are this body or we are this mind, we are the enjoyer. And the unfortunate part is that as Mahamaya, she makes wonderful, superb arrangements, various kind of arrangements in this world, which actually make us forget Krishna. So, it is said that actually it is virtually impossible to overcome material energy. We cannot overcome it. We are going to be under the influence. It's a question of our choice which influence we choose. But by surrender to Krishna with love, then actually the Mahamaya transforms into Yogamaya. So, it's a question of our choice of under whose control we want to be. So, there's no question of conquering the energy. It's a question of accepting which side we are on. And also, by our own endeavor, we can never be out of the clutches of Mahamaya. Even if we say we would like to be having the influence of Yogamaya, we cannot do it just by our own endeavor. We have to have the grace of Krishna, and that grace comes only by pleasing Him, which means that we follow His instructions. There's no other way. There's no manipulation or no yogic exercises or any austerities or some cultivation of knowledge which can actually help us to move away from Mahamaya to Yogamaya. It is only grace, mercy of the Lord, which can come by surrender, which will really please Him. So this path of bhakti actually teaches us that there is only one way, and that we come in, we do everything that we can to please Krishna, and in such a way that when He sees that we are serious, He will, bestow His mercy upon us and lead us to spiritual master and keep us in touch with the right association. But He will always test us. So therefore, Maya is very, which is also be a creation of Krishna, is also extremely thorough, very complete and very professional. That she will be always screening as per her instructions. She will be screening the devotees. That means just because we may express a desire, it doesn't mean that we have become a devotee. It's an ongoing process, it's a constant struggle. And that struggle is what really appeals to Krishna. Krishna wants to see that. So, it is under his direction that Maya will constantly come up with innovative ways of testing us. And to see whether we are sincere. So these tests are actually only way, the only reason is to check really whether we are, how sincere we are, how much we really want to be with Krishna. Because if you are insincere, then she keeps Krishna away from us. The there is a very nice story in this connection regarding Parvati or Durga. Because when she was, when Lord Shiva was with Parvati in their abode, and all of a sudden he became very ecstatic and suddenly, as he often does, suddenly started dancing and ecstatically shouting out the names of Lord Chaitanya, various forms of names of Lord Chaitanya in great ecstasy. So this was completely bewildering to Parvati-ji. So she was, she asked him, what is happening? So he mentioned that soon Lord Chaitanya will be coming to in Kali Yuga, making his appearance, and he gave a very beautiful description of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. And Parvati was extremely enamored. She was so much eager to have darshan or to get to know this the Lord. So she asked Lord Shiva that, what can I do to have the darshan or to meet the Lord in this form? So Lord Shiva told her that you should go to Navadvip. He's going to appear there. And you should do tapasya there. So she went there and she did tapasya for a long time. And at last Lord Chaitanya appeared in her presence and gave her the darshan. And she was overwhelmed. And she vent her feelings and she mentioned to her, to the Lord, how grateful she was, and she was choked, you know, with happiness. But she also mentioned that, you know, I have also got, I'm so grateful that you have appeared, but I am so much tied down by my thankless task as the screening process that we talked about, you know, as the gatekeeper, you know, to see who's who should be really worthy of Krishna's attention and who should not. That can I not at least have some participation in your leela, in a loving leela? That is my only desire. That, you know. So the Lord was very happy. So he said, "Yes, you will have an opportunity." And he said that you, when I appear, you will also be. He of course assured her that, you know, you are anyway in your original form as my consort, as Srimati Radharani, and now in this appearance also I will be appearing in the form of Srimati Radharani, but you will have the opportunity to be Prodhamaya, that thin layer which really will act as determining whether the devotee is whether the person is interested, because she would have the power to mold our attention in such a way that if we come sincerely as a devotee, approach the holy dham, we will actually see Navadvip dham as the supreme abode. And if we are not sincere, then we will just see it as any ordinary place. So in fact, and then of course she was very happy. So, and because she took the dust off his feet after he left and put it in the parting of her hair, So that's the, because it's called Simanta, so that is, the place is known as Simanta Deep. So, Parvati ji is, or Durga, is also, you know, playing the role of Prothamaya, and in, particularly in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. But as Durga, you know, Durga means a prison house, and we have often been told that actually this material world is a prison. Actually we see that, that if we have all either visited a prison or at least heard about, that by very definition the prison has to be extremely like a fortress, forbidding and to any person who enters or exits. The whole purpose is to see that the prisoners don't escape. So there are so many elaborate systems of walls and alarms, many sophisticated gadgets to keep the prisoners in. If anyone attempts to escape, you know, there is it's very difficult, and they have fallback positions. And so there are several layers of walls, very high levels, and plus guards and dogs and lights and so on. All these are meant, and in spite of that, there's hardly any prison in the world where prisoners have not escaped. There's no prison, in fact. I mean, I remember long ago there was a very, very famous movie called Escape from Alcatraz. It was a real story. That Alcatraz is supposed to be the most difficult prison in the world. It's an island off the US. And it was designed to challenge, it is, and even there also people have escaped. So there is not a single prisoner. It is the ingenuity of man. Somehow they will manage. But here, there are, this prison house is amazing that Krishna has created, where there is absolutely no walls, no alarms, or no guards, no logs, and yet nobody wants to leave. Everybody is in this prison wanting to stay because they are chained there. It is called the Matunga Agar. That means we are chained by the lust. We don't want to leave on our own accord. We have got so many temptations, so that we are actually happy to say, even if Krishna comes through his devotees, and the devotees are not in this prison. They are outside, and they are on the bidding of the Lord. They are actually coming and telling the people inside that, look, why don't you come out? You don't need to be here. But then, out of our own foolishness, we are telling them that, no, we are busy. I've got time, don't waste, don't interfere in my life, you know. I've got so many things to do. I've got this reason, that reason, occupation, family, this obligation, this job to do, this goal to achieve, this to do. I can't, don't bother me now. So actually, in spite of Krishna directly coming in through in the form of his devotees to guide us out, and that's the only way you can come out. The only way is that the keys are with Krishna. So when he opens the door and he says you come out, and we still don't want to come out. So that's the power of influence of Maya, which can totally change our perception of and our consciousness to such an extent that we see everything in a totally different light. So it's really how much is the effect of the consciousness, that the same two eyes and the same feelings, the same senses are actually perceiving everything that is going on. I mean, the two people could have the whole life in a completely different experience. In every event they could have totally different experience, complete opposite experience. So, and when we are told that this is entirely out of choice, that means we have a great responsibility. But we also have the example of Haridas Thakur, of course, on the other extreme, that where Maya came and did her best to test and break his vow, and at the end of 3 days, in fact, she became his disciple. So she totally surrendered. So that proves that following the devotional service path and being sincere, because there are two things which Maya cannot defeat. One is the the holy name, the Mahamantra, and the second is service to the Vaishnavas. If these two things are with us, if we stick to these two, there is no way that Maya can defeat us. But the whole purpose of Maya is to see that we, if we are following it, we become lax. If we are attempting to follow it, there will be obstacles. If there will always, even if you are following it, there will still be, there are even more subtle ways of bringing up these problems. For instance, Maya will bring up arguments between devotees, will cause, now if, there again if we have any attachments, then these arguments will become a rivalry. Then we become actually rivals, and then this we may not acknowledge it externally, but internally we will be seeing it in a very bit intimidating way or a hostile way, and this will really put barriers, and then this will always affect the way we approach our services. So we may do externally, but internally we may actually have started changing without our knowledge. But if we are ready to, we may make a mistake, but if we understand that, and or if we realize that, or if somebody tells us, and then the same way we will realize that, okay, we may instead of having, we may have had an argument, but then we would say that we are two different styles, or you know, he has his service, I have my service, and we go about doing it, and then anytime we interact, what is the best way to solve it? So we reconcile and know that we have our faults. So we will not let that ego come in the way. So this disharmony or discord between devotees is something which Maya can very, very easily and does bring about. So it's not that we have entered the the sanctum sanctorum temple, and then once you stepped in, means now Maya's doors are closed. Not like that. On the contrary, Maya changes her tactics. From the gross, we may think that we have now overcome the gross. The very fact that we think we have overcome the gross means we have started losing the battle against the subtle ways of Maya. So it is a very complicated game to tackle Maya. And instead of thinking of that, the only thing is that we just cling to the lotus feet with the fear that we could have a problem any time. And as you know, as was explained in one of the lectures, in my earliest days, one of the devotees who was to come, he used to, I remember very vividly how he used to describe that Maya is really just on our shoulder all the time. So it's like a snake. So you know, the minute we are slightly deviating or a little bit lax, and immediately it can affect us. So therefore we have to cultivate this, not to get attached, and to develop this detachment from profit, adoration, distinction. That strong desire is there to that we have done this or that. How do we bring ourselves from that? How do we move ourselves from that? Is really the that we want to do the service but not get recognized for it. Otherwise, listen, this will take away the desire to serve the Vaishnavas and increase our desire to lord over the Vaishnavas. That tendency is there that we would like to become the master, and we may still act humble externally, but our whole attitude would become one of controlling nature, and that really is very dangerous. So this the example is given of how to show how dangerous Maya is, that just the how water will find, if there's a crack anywhere, water will immediately go to that crack, you know, will always fill it up. So if we have a crack in our consciousness, Maya is like that, you know, it immediately goes. It's an automatic process. I mean, just simultaneously or without even a split second waiting. So we have to see that there is no crack in the wall of our thinking. And also we shouldn't be thinking that because we are devotees, you know, Maya will leave us alone. In fact, its job is to test us again and again and again. And we should always remember, one of the most famous examples is of Indra, when we talk of danger at every step, that Indra was a great devotee, Indra was the king of heavens, he was the leader among all the demigods. His position is incomparable compared to anybody in this material world. And if Indra could fall prey to his pride, then what is the hope or question of any individual, however powerful that person can be? Because Indra was meant, as an example for us, it was really to show us that the most powerful amongst the demigods could also fall prey. And what happened in his anger at the time when he momentarily lost control, and he actually spoke words, and he completely, he was actually abusive, he was insulting, and he could not even recognize his own master. He spoke at that time when Krishna tells everybody, all the Vrindavan Vasis, to not to pray to him, and when his anger is aroused, he really reacted violently. And in that mood he says that this foolish, arrogant, over-talkative, ordinary child. Now, he could not even recognize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his own master, in front of him. So if you were to see that, it may happen to us. What to speak of Supreme Personality of Godhead? If he couldn't recognize us, his master, we may also, in our arrogance, not recognize our own guru. That's how when we see, many times we went to Guru Aparad, or we leave the movement, or we leave Krishna consciousness. It's very easy to, it can happen easily. If Indra couldn't recognize Krishna, what is our hope that we may, and speak these words, and not recognize him? So for us to disregard or insult representative of Krishna would be very easy. And what to speak of just our guru, but even other Vaishnavas, even more so, because we would even disregard them further, because we would make them inconsequential in our mind, thinking that they are, that they are all faulty. So this is the great danger, and the danger at every step we keep hearing is not just the gross danger. We may that tomorrow I can, next moment I walk on the road and the car will hit me, or I'll lose my business, or some big calamity will happen. That of course could happen, and because it doesn't happen, we seem to think that that is far away. But danger at every step is more dangerous in the subtle way, that any moment our mind can change and our consciousness can change, and we will start looking at the same thing in a different way. And then if we start thinking from my position, we have the self-pitying mode, we are looking at our enjoyment of our own senses rather than Krishna's enjoyment, then that's all that is needed. Entire picture completely changes. So this is the power of Maya, which Krishna has deliberately brought, put in, and giving us this constant choice as to whether we want to be under this Maya or under Yoga Maya. Also in King Muchukunda's prayers, King Muchukunda, when he is, actually he was a very pious king, but he was very much, he feels that he was very much overcome by the presence of so many of the, his cavalry and soldiers, generals and others. And because that led to success, so he was dependent on them, and that he felt was actually a major distraction for him. And he said that these people, they constantly reinforce the misconception that we are this body, because in one form or the other, maybe because enhancing our prestige or enhancing our control, enhancing our the feeling that we are the enjoyer. So in the same way, this our family members, relatives, well-wishers, so-called well-wishers, maybe inadvertently, or they may not be meaning to, but nevertheless, all these collectively, this, the world outside us, is actually reinforcing this all the time. You know, they will praise us for something nice, they will blame us for something which goes wrong, and most important, they will try to influence us by their own version of illusory happiness, or attempt to have that happiness, and that their version of illusory happiness is coming collectively, because it comes from all sources, and that is why if we are not strong enough, we could also be swept away and be tempted to think that maybe the external facade of happiness might be there, maybe they are getting some taste, and we may let our guard down. So that is why this world is called the world of the cheaters and the cheated, because everybody is cheating one another. Each one is actually everybody is cheating by acting on the bodily platform. And what are they cheating? They're cheating us of the opportunity to actually see transparently our position. Simply put, on the position of the servant and Krishna as the master. If we see our constitutional position as that, and actually are completely convinced of that and believe in it, and act according to it on moment-to-moment basis, really that sums up everything, because that that means we will follow everything, all instructions. We will. So this opportunity that we have to see in real light what is our constitutional position, that is being deprived, and that is what we are cheated of. And that is what, when you say the cheating, what are they cheating us of, or attempting to cheat others of, is that they are by falsely giving the other side, or the impression of illusory happiness, or their version, then that's how they completely distort the picture. So, we should know that sense gratification and Krishna consciousness ultimately don't go together. You know, you can't, as they say, you can't put two swords in the same sheath. They go ill together. It's like you light a fire and then you put water on that. So, obviously the two are completely opposite each other. And, one may say it is so obvious, but that's the problem. It is never any so obvious, because Maya is always very, very tricky. And it would put us in, the doubts or thoughts in our mind, we cannot distinguish really whether it is Krishna speaking to us or Maya speaking to us. When the thought comes to us that maybe we need some sense gratification to enliven our life, you know, maybe we are doing a lot of work, but now we are a bit too tired and therefore we need to take rest. So all these maybes are actually various ways of bringing a little bit of temporary halt, and just a temporary halt or a temporary deviation, and that's all that Maya needs. In fact, Maya does not need your, will not come and ask for a whole life. Maya will not need your whole, she doesn't need your entire, your year or your month, or a day. She needs just one moment. She needs just the next moment. The minute you give that one moment, that's all. So it looks very tempting that what is the one moment I can always spend and see, explore. And we don't even think it is Maya. We think it is one of our curiosities, or one of, or maybe it's part of a devotional service, that yes, I can do better devotional service if I take rest, or if I were to take a crutch on some enjoyment which is may not be recommended. But then that actually determination strips away our determination. That means we start weakening, and because we don't realize it, it can put us into on the opposite track. So what we need to remember is that there's a saying goes, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. That if we have a idle mind, that's when really Maya actually moves in, because always wanting to see, there is always Krishna or Maya. There is never any vacuum. It's either one or the other. There is so the minute we are not conscious of our overall position, or even if we are engaged in Krishna service one way or the other, in the we are filling our lives in the right way. But if there is any gap in between, is any crack or any opportunity, immediately Maya will take that. So if we are slightly spiritually lethargic, we may be actually physically very active. We may be filling our life with so many things. But spiritually if we are lethargic, then Maya can move in. So the important thing is that we have to see what activities make us spiritually lethargic. We may be very, very active physically, working 18 hours a day, thinking that Maya can't get in. On the contrary, if we are lethargic, you know, these are, by becoming even more attached to work without Krishna having any role to play in it, in fact, that is the surest and fastest way of getting on the opposite path. King Muchukunda mentions very nicely that in his prayers, that a man blessed, a man obsessed with thoughts of what he needs, who is intensely greedy and who is delighting in sense enjoyment. I'll repeat, a man who is obsessed with thoughts of what he needs, who is intensely greedy and who is delighting in sense enjoyment, is ultimately confronted by Krishna. So, really, this may describe everyone who is not in Krishna consciousness, who does not come under the loving surrender of Krishna. That means the whole world, which means that everybody is confronted by Krishna. That everybody, because most people are obsessed with thoughts of what they need, and they actually work towards it, they're intensely greedy towards it, and they delight in sense enjoyment. So that means, and then he wonderfully gives an excellent example, that it's just like a hungry snake licks its fangs, you know, in anticipation, in delight, when it sees a frightened mouse. Just see the position. There's a snake which is really frightening, and there's a frightened mouse which knows that it's now about to die. Now that is the form in which Krishna would appear to us as death. So ultimately as death or as Shyam Sundar, we have a choice. If we want Krishna as a devotee, Krishna will appear in to his pure devotees, he appears in as his threefold bending form, with his playing his flute, in all his bedak jewels and his complexion like the moon, etc. And on the other side, we have the choice. So it's really comes down to our free choice. That we want Shyam Sundar or we in his form, or we want him in the form of this gruesome death, where like a snake he is actually bearing his fangs, waiting for capturing us. And these are the two extremes, but what happens is that we find that Maya also traps us by limiting our spiritual progress. And this is where, at least particularly the Indians, we see this very often, that there are so many pious people, people who are sinless, people who are very charitable, people who will uphold their Hindu or Muslim or Christian faith, people who will go out of the way to, you know, do those, like on festivals and other days, they'll celebrate according to the particular prescribed norms. And feel that they have they are doing everything that is necessary, and that is really a trick of Maya. That actually, just in the limiting it to piety, and just merely following the rules and regulations, but actually we are not really accepting or imbibing the genuine understanding of the position of the servant of the servant of the servant, and that is really where Krishna consciousness is the most unique and rare, and it's a benediction. There is no other movement in the world, there is no other understanding in the world where this most important aspect is brought right up front, that it is actually brought face to face. The real truth is brought, you see, in everywhere else this is hidden, it tucked away in all other scriptures, religions, etc. The fact that our position is just as a constitutional servant, Jivera Swarupaha Krishna Nityadas, this fact comes, is only Krishna consciousness actually brings it straight to our face, right from the beginning. There is no, it's not that you go through many, you come in a subtle way, somebody brings you to the temple, connection with Bhagavad Gita course, and you may go through life not understanding it, and then many years later somebody, you realize that, oh, I didn't know that I'm supposed to. It's not like that. I mean, there's hardly anyone who would not be hearing in every lecture or right from up front, what is our position. This is the only move. Everywhere else it is, this is absent. And that is where the Maya really plays a trick, that it brings us into conflict with our own desires, or lets our own desires overcome us. So we want to then let ourselves feel that yes, we are doing even the external form of going to the temple, doing some puja and all, we limit it. And we say, I have done my duty, my quota is over, and I can now look after other things, and then switch off completely and do things which could, where Krishna has no role to play, or where, which are actually allowing us to feel that I am better, I am doing so much more service than the other person, I am doing this particular service better than the other person. So these are ways which can also be very, very dangerous too. So this pitfall is always there, that number one, that we could be completely, we could be limited to our spiritual consciousness if we are just accepting a level of piety. Okay, now let us say that devotees have crossed that and they realize that, and people are struggling to be sincere and serious. They come to the movement and they spend years really following the principles. Even there is another pitfall. Maya always puts pitfalls in pitfalls. You know. Now the pitfall is that, see, if we don't do the service, then we are under Maya's clutches. That means we are deviating from Krishna. But if we do our service well, then the feeling of doing well also is a pitfall. So actually, you know, we are. It's always, it's a really a double-edged sword. And the fact that all we can do is to be aware that it's a double-edged sword, and pray to Krishna that you know, I just want to really serve you. I want to serve you by serving, pleasing your representatives and his servants. And in that process, you know, I don't understand many things, but I really would like to, please protect me from that. So if, in that process, if somebody praises me, or somebody thinks I have done well, then it is only your glory. It is because you have made me do that. And if there is some benefit coming out of that, it is only because of you. So, and it's very difficult to not to accept praise or to not be overcome by it. So therefore, we should always ask Krishna constantly to pray to him, at least internally, that you know, so-and-so speaking like this, so-and-so saying that, I genuinely don't deserve, because I know my weaknesses or faults, but nevertheless, please protect me, because it is, you know, going to my head, and I can see my self weakening. This was very beautifully explained in one lecture given here, that the it's like the example is given that when we are decorating the deity, we decorate the deity so nicely, and that's a wonderful service. But then, along with it, if we start thinking that secretly, at least, that, you know, somebody even tells us also that I'm doing this service so well. Then actually, or it could be any other service, book distribution or any other Krishna conscious service, and we start feeling that we are the doers. We have actually made an impact. We have actually done a substantial improvement. We made brought about a change, or without us it wouldn't have happened, etc. Then actually, we are actually worshipping the deity externally. But really speaking, we are only using that as a means to really worship. The deity on the altar only becomes a means to really worship the real worshipable deity, which is our own false ego. So our own ego is really the worshipable deity, We are only putting this as an excuse and letting ourselves be, we may say externally I am doing this, but really what we are doing is that we are nourishing and nurturing our own ego. So, how do we then get away from it? I mean, we say it's an impossible situation. So, in one sense it is. It's a very difficult situation, it's a double-edged sword, that we have to be careful. But therefore, being sincere, at least we can't fool ourselves. We know where we are and what we are thinking, what we want to do, what are the distractions and weaknesses. But if we keep an association regularly, then and hearing the philosophy and chanting regularly, then we are always reminded of our position. We are always told what the reality is, and we could be protected. It has to be on a regular basis. And most important, at least I find from practical experience also, that by regular association we also we are constantly ashamed when we see examples elsewhere, because we will always see examples of people who are actually able to follow and also avoid the temptations in spite of doing enormous contribution in terms of giving their consciousness, time, life, etc. And they're highly praiseworthy, and in spite of that they genuinely feel that they have done nothing. Now, when we see that and we see how much what we need to do, so we need constant reminders. We need to be told what our goal is, and that rather than thinking that we have already made it. That's why it's like in any school also, when you really want to do well, if you associate with the people who have done best or who study the hardest, they will always be looking at, they may be getting 96 or 100, but they are always cribbing over why they missed those 4 marks, what they should be doing more. They never even think that they got 96, they are most unhappy. But that's not a material goal. Here, they don't even consider that they have actually made so much progress. They actually may have, but they are not even conscious of it. So, we should always be looking at that in those associations where we see that what more we need to do. And then when we see that, and we know our own internal weaknesses, it's a matter of shame, and it pricks us. And that pricking of the conscience is at least a symptom that we have some hope. If we close that pricking, or if we completely submerge it, then really we have closed the doors, or we are deliberately banging the doors shut to any hope. We are ourselves only pushing with our effort. We are not even allowing any help to come. So, though it's a double-edged sword, though it's a difficult situation, and we are under constant worry, but we should know it is a test, and the test is really whether we are sincere, and only then Mayadevi will really allow us to come in face to face with Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
Thank you, Ms. Prabhu, for a very enlivening and deep class. Recently, in one of the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam, I was reading that if one wants to be peaceful and happy in this world, then one should not unnecessarily disturb the other living entities. One should learn to get along well with all other living entities. So, and similar thing I found, that if one learns to deal with juniors and seniors and equals in a warm way, then one's mind becomes peaceful and happily situated. And all the people who hold positions like department heads, or like counselors, or like say temple president, or things like that, because they are the ones who deal with many, many people, and they get to see the black side and bright side of different people, and they, over a period of time, they just they keep doing the exercise of dealing with varieties of situations, at a point of time they may learn the art of dealing with people and situations nicely. And owing to which, they may come to a point of happily being situated. And I have observed that many people holding leading positions are peaceful and happy. Many people, like counselors for example. You made an interesting point in your presentation today, that you know, one may still act humble but harbor some subtle desires to control the Vaishnavas. You know. So, I would like to know a little bit more about this point, that whether one's happiness comes from proper practice of Krishna consciousness or the proper dealing with Vaishnavas, or it could be from a sense of joy and pride that comes that everything is going on well in spiritual life, you know. Or everyone is that's a sense of accomplishment, you know. That kind of pride could come. So you were telling about the control of Vaishnavas also gives a kind of joy, and one may continue to act humble, you were saying. You could elaborate more on that.
Yeah, I meant it as a danger that we may actually get into the mood of controlling Vaishnavas. We shouldn't be in the mood of introspecting all the time and saying that, have I made 10% progress, am I achieving, am I happy, am I going towards. Our concentration or goal is really that as a constitutional position of servant, or the servant means that we have to please our immediate superior or authority or master or devotee, who may be a servant another devotee. So basically pleasing Vaishnavas, pleasing the serious devotees or the genuine people is really our goal. Now practically speaking, it may be our spiritual master, it could be our service head, or could be the temple president. In that endeavor, whether we have inadvertently, which may happen often, hurt someone or spoken something, this should be our constant thought. Whether we have actually, we've spent 15 days without hurting someone, so we've made success, and last time I did it, in 5 days I got angry again second time, and I failed. I mean, that, we shouldn't be judging as to whether we are now patting us on the back that, okay, we are now making progress. We should always be aware of the danger and the worry that, because there is a genuine worry, it is not a false modesty, it is a real thing. The next moment we'll be down in the ditch and all our years would go. So, if we just focus on whether we're doing our role in the right mood, right consciousness, that we are pleasing them in the real spirit, and that too in a way where are they completely happy? Are they totally satisfied? No matter whether it's a menial task or whatever its size of the role. And of course, it may not just be a task, but ultimately it's our life, because apart from the task, our own spiritual attempts, you know, the sadhana or our, that's also service. So we have a variety of devotional services. Some may be, so if we just concentrate on seeing that whether we are doing it in the right mood and whether pleasing, and that we should be extremely sensitive to that. All we need to see is whether we are pleasing our spiritual master. Or a spiritual master in many ways, like we may hear directly from him, or we somehow know that are we causing a problem or not. So if we are just aware of that, then other things get taken care of. I mean, that's the way I understand it.
You could tell some of the symptoms we could observe in ourselves by which one can know that I'm not acting in the right attitude, probably I'm trying to control the Vaishnavas. You could tell some of the symptoms. Because when one introspects, then by certain symptoms one can detect this tendency and one can try to curb it.
Yeah, sometimes you may be more assertive than what is necessary. For instance, you know, we are always anxious to do the job. And there may be difference of opinion, but then we may go out of our bounds and may actually lose control or be extremely pushy. Now, when we have one side of it, somebody may have another side, and it is not a question of right or wrong. It may be, it's a relatively small service, but it could be done in different ways. So, if our attitude is, if we get extremely impatient, if we start getting agitated much earlier, without waiting to hear the other person, and these are definitely signs that, we feel that we are right and the other person just doesn't understand or doesn't have the experience or is not wanting to learn from me. So, I'd say definitely getting more impatient, irritated or little argumentative, pushy, then at least these are symptoms. Now, sometimes the task may be so large and you actually may be in a position where you have got a larger picture and you are agitated because you've got a time limit and you have to do. But these will be rare occasions, but then even then you can take additional help. But in most cases, usually it would be that it's only we have changed and now we are becoming more demanding, and actually in really speaking, the change is a change in our consciousness. Any other questions? Krishna Prabhu.
Prabhu, you have explained so nicely about Vaishnava Seva and how that is so important in our spiritual life. And sometimes we find that during the course of doing Vaishnava Seva, actually there are two situations. One is where we are interacting with karmis and where we are interacting with devotees. Of course, as we spend more years in Krishna consciousness, to a certain extent our consciousness does get purified, and our interaction with the karmis also becomes, rather than trying to take advantage of them, we like to work with them in a very nice atmosphere, whereas they would like to take advantage of us. So we find that situations come where non-devotees take advantage of us, or also when you are doing Vaishnava Seva, devotees sometimes take advantage of us. So naturally it could be that the way we approach that problem could be different in both the situations. So we just like your advice as to how we should handle in both the situations. One is where advantage is taken on us by non-devotees and where advantage is taken by devotees.
Actually, I remember not too far in the distant past, some couple of years ago, a statement which His Holiness Radhanath Swami had made. It was very astonishing to me at that time, and he said that every moment I am letting myself being taken advantage of, and he said I want that. I was very surprised to hear that, but he said that is what I want. I want devotees to take advantage of. That is what my life is for. Let them take full advantage of it. So what I understand is that our approach to devotees and to others would be very different. To devotees, what we mean devotees is anyone who is interested in devotional service, anyone who is interested at whatever level, he has some interest in Krishna consciousness. Then to them, that is the ideal, that if we allow ourselves to actually, that means we extend ourselves to the fullest. We give 100%. We have nothing held back. We are completely, totally for them. That really is the ideal, and that we should. That's the hallmark of intelligence, really. That to give ourselves for the devotees. But for those who have no interest, again, it is our intelligence that we should not waste our time. We've got precious time. Why should we? It's a different thing that you preach. Preaching is a different thing. But when we're talking of seva and extending ourselves, we have to cut the time to the maximum. So the two approaches will be diametrically opposite, in fact. Here we would give ourselves completely. and the and to the others, we would do what is absolutely minimum, but not to the extent that not to take in the sense that we may be very obnoxious or hurtful, or but that happens sometimes in our immaturity that we may be very curt and all that. But you know, we can be polite but very firm and just draw the line and cut it, and that's it. Particularly with the workplace or the family environment or the relatives and, you know, the circle, the social circle. So, and if we are consistent with that, then people know. Then it's not that they are all the time going to badger us, because so it's a matter of time before they know, okay, ye to gaya abhi, ye kaam se, they're not going to bother you. So, if they're serious about something, they will come. And if we have to do social responsibility, we will go. Otherwise, we will try to see how much more time we can give. Because we would then find it satisfying, and therefore we would like to extend ourselves more. And we would want to find more opportunities. What can I do more? Because it is pleasing. As we just heard that, you know, it is very, very pleasing to please Krishna, to please the devotees, is actually very pleasing. And that pleasure is something which, if that strikes a chord in our heart, then we want to do more. That what can I do? Because we see that these people are doing even more. See, it's actually a transcendental competition in that sense, that because we see that they're doing so much more. For instance, Prabhupada, taking the extreme highest example, and then his disciples. What pleases us most? If you analyze, what is it that we just instantly want to please them or to serve them? Why? Is it just because they all speak well? It happens to be that because they are so pure that they have a very good communication, because they are so clear in their mind. That is the effect of purity. But that is not the issue, because that you can find millions of people. The important thing is because we see a consistency in their life, the struggle and what they have given up and what position they have reached in terms of devotional service and pleasing their Guru Maharaj. So, and as an example. So, because they have done so much, that we just attracted to do something for them. And because we are attracted, it becomes pleasurable. And we want to, it's like a magnet. So the more we go towards that, it is the other things, that's the higher taste that we talk of. That we get the higher taste, the other taste just falls off. We don't even have to make an effort to drop that. We can sometimes continue it too. In the beginning, we all have had so many various tastes. And then let the winner take all. Let the victor emerge. And if you're sincere, it is, there's no question, there's no match, the real pleasure. But if we are letting ourselves be in other things, then we're pulling ourselves back. So that means here, if we extend ourselves fully to the devotees, it's going to be automatic. And we should be very guarded and circumspect that it is our responsibility not to be taken advantage of. So, as they say, that we should not cheat, not fool others, but also not get fooled. After all, we are representatives of Srila Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's army. So as that, we have to uphold that. So we shouldn't be fooled also.
Hare Krishna. Weakness of the heart should be considered as subtle or gross attack of Maya, and how to overcome it? Weakness of the heart.
I mean, not heart attack. Heart attack would be gross, but I think weakness of the heart would be subtle form. Actually, that is the classic form of, I mean, if we are fortunate if we are even actually able to analyze and be able to detect that I'm becoming weaker, which means at least we have hope. We are really fortunate that we have detected the right time. But certainly that would be in a very subtle form. Overcoming is that we, first of all, we recognize it. We allow that, we don't dilute it, we don't discard it, we don't try to camouflage it, you know, we don't try to give it another color. That means we don't first of all fool ourselves, let us be clear. We know what is the truth. The second is that we then attempt it's difficult to fight back, then we at least associate with devotees. We go to, then if our sadhana is weakened, if our service attitude is weakened, at least you don't cut that link. We associate. Prabhupada used to say, for those who left also, he used to cry. He said, whatever happens, even if you have to fall down, don't leave this movement. He used to beg them. That means when somebody is weakening, he is a wounded soldier, don't leave the battlefield. Just remain in association. So all we need to do is just associate. And it's said in the Nectar of Instruction, Nectar of Devotion. Nectar of Devotion says that if a devotee has a fall down, he doesn't have to go through any ritualistic prayaschit and other thing. His real prayaschit is devotional service. If he stays in devotional service, that's it. So, the taste will not be there. The weakness will come when we see that the taste is going away and we are moving away. But that's the struggle that we have to stick on, and the association of devotees and of the right-minded devotees, serious devotees. And then it's a matter of time before we will get strengthened again in terms. I mean, actually it is like a heart attack. For heart attack, we immediately go straight away to the ICU, we go to the doctor, and then they keep us from all of the influences. So here also, in the attack of Maya or the weakness, we go straight to the doctors, the spiritual doctors or the devotees, and minimize or cut off the other association, go to them, just associate with them. We don't know what's going on, what medicine they're giving, how they're doing it. We may not even like the medicine, but we just put ourselves. So association is very critical. And then the revival can take place. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srimad Prabhupada ki.